You're listening to the Black British Parent Podcast, having conversations, sharing experiences, and supporting the Black British Parent community with your host, Deborah Field Pelly.
Hi, I'm Julie, and welcome to the Black British Parent Podcast. And on this episode, we have an amazing person joining me this evening. I should say this evening, should I? Because anyone could be listening to this any time. A mum, mentor, author, and CEO, Shanima Kashta, is refreshing, inspiring, and empowering woman. And I'm grateful that we are able to share space and time in this moment, as I always am.
Shanima. Thank you. Thank you. I love this intro. I get used to that.
But it's true. And you know, I try to be professional with guests that we have here, but you're someone I've known for a long time. And although we don't speak often, when we do, it's always uplifting and upful. Do you know what I mean? I know that the works you're doing are meaningful and much needed, and I benefit from them. So I know what I benefit from you. And I just look forward to more people benefiting from you, like so many you've been helping already so far. So, yeah, man.
Thank you. Likewise, you already know anyway.
I appreciate that. So how have you been anyway? How's the family? How's life been treating you?
Everyone is good. Yeah, family is good. There are major adjustments. I think we've discussed this before, actually, with the two women in the house thing. Now that Heavenly is 18. Yeah, that's a whole new world. Parenting an adult and parenting children is a very different, I didn't think it would be that different, and I thought the transition would be over a longer period of time, but yeah. It feels like it's been quite abrupt, and yeah, that's new. But otherwise, everything is good. I say otherwise as if that isn't good. It's good. It's amazing. But what can happen is the blurred line between parent and friend, because we are, you know, very similar in personality. We have similar interests, and we get on like a house on fire. But it means that sometimes she forgets that I'm like your little brethren. And so it can get a little bit. But
in that though as well, do you find, I find this sometimes, that you reflect on how your parents had to deal with that, because, and I say that not in terms of the child, your child itself, I'm talking about the energy of what you're having to experience as a parent with your child. Yeah. At that stage, of course, your parents had to have gone through something similar and what it was like for them. Because
yeah, I can't imagine.
I remember my mum used to say to me, like, watch when you have your child, when you become a parent yourself. And then I become a parent myself, and the same thing I find that my mum might have been having, you know, concerns about is similar to you, not exactly the same, but a similar sort of way that I have with my own child at that age too, no?
Yeah, my mum was a bit more raggo than me, so the way that she approached it is very different to the way that I approach. I'm not going to say that any was right or wrong, but yeah. My mum was like, oh, so you're grown, all right then, go along. So she kind of just left me to figure out how not grown I was, whereas with me, I'm trying to still continue to guide as much as possible and for as long as possible, because I know you don't know. Like, and I remember feeling like I was grown, and now you can see how much you really didn't know. So I'm still trying to give that guidance, but without her feeling disempowered or, you know, like infantilizing her, because rightfully so, she's seen 18 cycles. But and I was a different child as well. So I was a completely different child. She is more focused, more aligned with who she wants to be and who she is behaving like, whereas I didn't know who I was. So whoever I was around is whoever I was, and she doesn't really have that. She's very headstrong. So being a good guide to a headstrong person means that you have to kind of show them where to look without telling them what to see, so that they can maintain their own independence and, you know, self-esteem. So yeah, it's different. It's very
It
different.
is. I definitely identify with that because I can say I have a very similar journey. I'd expect many our kind of age group generation may have, maybe. But as much as we are very different in terms of what our focuses were, like I definitely agree. My oldest is very focused. All of them are. But there's still certain similarities in personalities that are just even just ways and mannerisms that seem to be like, okay, that's what my mom was talking
Yeah,
about.
100%. Yeah, that's that mouth. Yes.
Honesty. I don't know if it's like a bad thing. It's just the honesty. And I guess I appreciated that whatever differences my mom and myself had, I was still able to always be open and honest with her. Do you get what I mean? Even
Yeah,
if,
same.
right. So, and having that with my daughter now, it's just like a million times more open and honest because of
Yeah.
the foundation. Do you get what I mean? So yeah, that's definitely been interesting.
I'm loving it though, don't get me wrong. Like, obviously, it's difficult, but I love it. It's
I wouldn't
incredible.
for the world. It has its moments. Wouldn't change it for the world at all. So I'm gonna just dig dive like dig.
Go for it.
So can you tell us about your entrepreneurial journey and how you became the founder of the Prosper platform?
Okay, well, my entrepreneurial journey. Well, that's a big question. Usually it's like, well, I used to work for this and then I decided to be, no. I think my entrepreneurial journey would started when I was about 10. We had quite a tumultuous upbringing, I can't lie. Our house was broken into, I remember. This is like some of my earliest memories. A lot of stuff I've blocked, you know, just for my own safety. But I remember we had to move out of this house, and we was moved into temporary accommodation. And every time I moved house, I moved house about 16 times in my life. But every time I moved house, I reinvented myself. So I'd like change my name and, you know, add a little white lie to add a little bit of vim and pizzazz to myself. So this time, when we moved to this temporary accommodation, my baby sister had just been born. I was about 10, and I moved to a new area, changed my name to CJ. I was obsessed with Janet Jackson at the time, so I had to fling the Janet in there. And I started a little car wash business. I told all the children in the area that I've got a car wash business, I need new staff, and they should come work for my car wash business. And so we went around knocking all the doors in this area. It was in Penge. And I went around knocking on the door saying, oh, can we wash your cars? And we had the audacity to ask people, have you got a bucket and sponge to wash your car? And so it started off like that. We made up a little change. We went to Woolworths on Penge High Street. We bought our own buckets, our own sponges. And yeah, that's how it started, like in the summer of 97, washing
Wow.
cars. And I realized that, you know, when everyone else was going to the sweet shop and buying penny sweets and stuff, I was buying better equipment, you know, better cloth, like, so we're not scratching up people's things. I was making sure that I was putting back into the business. I remember even getting like little Fruit of the Loom t-shirts, so we all had the same t-shirt. I took my thing very seriously. But it also meant that I could like buy corned beef and rice and things like that for the house, whereas no one else didn't really need to do that. So I knew from very early on that if you don't work, you don't eat. Like, nothing comes for free. And so there has been multiple little businesses and hustles like that through the years, whilst going to school. Even going to school, like, I know everyone says, oh, I used to sell sweets at school, but I actually did. Like, I genuinely did. By the time I got to secondary school, it was single cigarettes. And you
I don't know why
know
I'm not in my head because I'm like, yeah, it was like that, yeah.
It was the single
I
cigarettes.
remember
Instead
them.
of selling single cigarettes for 20p, I'm selling them for 70p. Either you want it or you're not. And yeah, so I always kind of had this hustler mentality, and it helped me and it didn't, because I didn't really pay attention in secondary school. I only paid attention to what I wanted to pay attention to. And then other than that, it was like, I got money to make. We can't be learning about Henry the Eighth right now, because that's not going to get my school uniform for next term. Otherwise, I'm going to get bullied. So it was that real. So fast forward, when I had Heavenly at 17 or 16, just before I turned 17. And I before that it was very much street life, like very much road, that sort of thing, gang affiliation. I hate the term gang because they're just your people then. But when you look back at it, it was like I was definitely a gang.
Wow. So you say at the time you didn't realize.
No, I don't think I did. And I
What?
think even for years afterwards, I don't think I did. It's only when I started to work with young people later on down the line, doing youth work and different stuff like that, then I realized what being in a gang actually is and how. I think it's the loyalty that determines whether or not it's a gang. If you don't have the freedom to leave, then you're in a gang. You're in something that you're not in control of. And although I would have had the freedom to leave according to my people, then the problems that we created for ourselves in the street meant that I couldn't because it would follow me wherever I go. So once I had my child, I kind of felt like a survivor's guilt because my friends were still finding themselves in problems. Their life was still catching up with them. They weren't able to leave, but I had to sort of get out or get off of road free pass by having a baby. And so I went into youth work. And I loved music. I was an MC, I was a rapper. And even then, I used to take my music seriously. Like, I'm not leaving my house for less than £50. So if you want me to come and do this show, you're gonna have to pay me. Whereas a lot of people weren't seeing spitting and stuff like that as something you can make money from. It was more just like a release to talk about what you're talking about. Yeah, so I went into youth work after I had Heavenly, and I took those same skills from being an MC and understanding the music business a little bit because my mom was a promoter. So understanding how to promote your music, how to make sure you've got PRS and you're getting your royalties if you do get to a point where your music's being played, how to book shows, how to attract A&Rs, things like that. And I wrote a program, a 13-week program, and rolled it out across youth clubs. Now I say that like it was easy. It took long. It took like over a year to get anyone, any local government or anyone to take me seriously because I was so young and I had a child and they were like, well, this girl don't know what she's talking about. But yeah, so that was that. That was very much voluntary work. I became the Millennium Volunteer of the Year. I done like over 10,000 hours voluntary work across schools and youth clubs and homeless shelters and YMCAs and all these different things. Just basically just to give back to the youth and let them know that your where you come from doesn't determine where you're going, whether you've got a child, whether you was in, there was so much I could relate to as well. It was easy for them to connect with me and understand, okay, you're not just coming here and talking down at us or preaching at us, you know, because you've lived it. And you've been about it. So, yeah, that was the beginnings of my entrepreneurial journey, more into like not-for-profit work, social entrepreneurship. Then at the beginning of social enterprise, I learned all about that and then started coaching. So I was coaching people into how to create profitable but heart-led business. Because, and you will know that I'm still very much passionate about being compensated prosperously for what you put out into the world. And at the time, I didn't know what that meant until something called social enterprise came about because it was either like you had a for-profit business or you didn't. And it was like you're eating or you're not, and that's not right. So I was glad for that, got into that. And I was there for years and coaching and mentoring mainly in social enterprise and not-for-profit business. For about 10 or so years. You know, I can't count. It's about 10 or so years. But going back to your question, really, really long story short, the Prosper platform did not start in this form. Right now it's a SaaS business. So it's a web builder basically. You can build your websites, funnels, e-commerce with no code. So you don't have to know how to code. You don't have to know how to, you don't have to pay no one £10,000 to build your website and get scammed. That's a different story. You don't, it's got everything you need, templates, no code tools to run and grow your business online. So that's what the Prosper platform is now. But when it started off, it was an ed tech. So I was basically putting as much of my knowledge as I could into online courses, digital downloads, planners, audios, audiobooks, that sort of thing, to for the same purpose, to be able to educate people into conscious leadership, entrepreneurship, making money from doing what you love without burning out, that sort of thing. But I went to develop an app. I wanted to develop it into an app and I got scammed. But actually, it was a blessing in disguise because the business model that I have now works so much better for me because it's not me producing all of the content. It means that you can actually come and bring your excellence to the platform and use it like that. But yeah, so that's how the Prosper platform was born. It's just a year old. The SaaS part of it actually is since March. So it's still very young and very new. But yeah, all of it, I see now how much it connects to. That's why I like that question and why I say it's a big question, because I always feel like I've been all over the place for years, but I actually haven't. I've more or less had the same mission since I was a kid. Just now it's all of that has amalgamated into this. So yeah, that's where we are now.
Said about the SaaS, sorry.
SaaS, yeah, so systems as a service. So
Can you explain that, please, for those of
yeah,
us
so
who know what that is?
systems as a service is basically where you don't have to build your own customer relationships manager. So, or your, well, any system. So the web systems that we provide are e-funnels, so or sales funnels. If you don't know what a funnel is basically where if you click on someone's landing page, you see that there's something nice that they're offering you. You put in your email address in exchange for whatever it is that they're offering you, maybe a PDF or 14-day trial, nudge, nudge, wink, wink. And you're now inside their funnel. So the first page of that would be the landing page that you saw somewhere as an ad or on social media. Inside that funnel now, they're able to contact you with emails or anything, any offers that they might have on the inside of that until you're able to get to their main product. So for us, that's a subscription to sign up to the Prosper platform and build your website. Or you could have, it could work for any business, whatever business you have. So you could buy their product or service or digital download or whatever it is. And ultimately, it could work in place of a website. You don't even need a website if you don't want to have a full 10-page website with this, and that. Or you can build a website where, you know, the service is the website. You've got your web page, your shop on the website, your about page, et cetera, et cetera. So all of these different systems is what I'm providing as a service so that you don't have to get them from seven different places. You can get it all in one.
Thank you. I mean, I don't want to ask stupid questions, but I
No,
know
it's not.
many people. I know no question is stupid, but I know some of the answers, but I want you to explain it as well. The context of how important it is to have these systems put in place for businesses, because there's many people who start in business and they just start with perhaps their product or their what they create, for example, but don't necessarily understand or have any experience, wouldn't even know where to begin with setting up a system like that.
Yeah.
How important is, why is that important to have these systems put in place for businesses?
It's so important because there's nothing wrong with maybe just running your business from Instagram or TikTok. There's so many businesses that are just a TikTok page nowadays are doing fantastic. They're making a lot of money, but these platforms can just easily be taken away from you. I think we all know, we've both personally experienced what it is to be shadow banned or have your page removed or have your voice silenced or stifled by these alternative apps that have their own mission and purpose, you know. And on Instagram, you are the product, like you're not the producer. As much as we do produce and as much as we do try to put out on these platforms, they have their own agenda, and that is to make sales. So if you're not pumping into their ad revenue, if you're not buying or picking up what they're putting down, ultimately they can take your voice and your platform away from you. So it's so important to not only have the complete system, but even just to have something that is separate from your social media. If it's just a mailing list that you have and you can always contact people by email, we had email when we were in school, we had email when we were in work, we have email as business owners. Like, email is never ever going anywhere. It's secure, it's safe, it's a direct line to you. That's not your phone. So if you want to keep hold of your people, your community, and you know, whoever's interested in whatever services that you provide, it's sensible to have systems outside of social media where you can contact them directly, and it's your real estate. You know, whatever you put on your website is your voice, is your real estate. You can do whatever you want. So it's really important to understand that. And also, as well, like for the growth of your business, there's only so far you can grow if you're only available wherever, like on social media and such. Even if you have a brick and mortar business, which I've had, I've had more than one brick and mortar business, but your online presence is still so important. You have a global reach. People are, you know, the majority of the planet is on the internet every single day. So for your growth, your longevity, and your reach, it's so important to have, you know, systems in place for your business.
And this is not to say to not use social media platforms, but this
At
is
all, no. Use them, definitely. They're free, they're there to be used. They're where you can find people, but it's just the first instance. After that, you have to like keep them, keep the people.
definitely. So you're an author as well, and you've written a few workbooks. I
Yes.
can't. I'm yet to get my coffee. I shouldn't be saying that, but yes, I like the idea of what I'm saying. I like the idea of what you've been able to produce. How was that whole process of creating workbooks? What's that been like for you, sharing your knowledge?
I didn't know you didn't have one. I'm sending it to you now. I have to send you a copy now. It has been interesting. They're a good few years old now, but I've always wanted to make it very simple. So the Enlightrepreneur Planner was about enlightened entrepreneurship. It was aimed towards spiritual entrepreneurs. At the time when it was written, this spirituality thing, people were becoming awake very quickly, enlightened very quickly, but also there were a lot of charlatans, there were a lot of loud people selling, you know, their spirituality kind of there was no kind of dignity, there was no dignity, there was no process. So the Enlightrepreneur Planner was to be able to help people who did have a voice, a spiritual voice as well, or a conscious voice, but didn't really know how to make it into a business with integrity. So that's what the planner was for. And it goes into all of that as well, understanding your vision, mission, and purpose for a business. A lot, there were people that bought the planner and was like, by the time I got to the end, I realized I didn't want to make it a business. I wanted my spirituality be set to be sacred and to be mine, and they didn't. So it just helps you to go through understanding why you want to have a spiritual business if you do, and also reaching people. So how to reach that community again. Getting
That's
into that social media marketing and that sort of things, where do you find the others?
yeah, I think that's super important to be able to reflect and understand, because obviously with spirituality, that is a very sacred and intimate sort of part of self. So I never thought about it like that in terms of going through such a workbook and then actually finding that you don't want to do a business in that field, because business, I suppose, especially nowadays, businesses, especially with social media being so readily available, it makes you really connect with the person who's running the business. So there's not really much boundaries and personal space. Obviously, if you
Exactly.
place, and they can be there, but yeah, that's interesting perspective. But yeah, thank you for that. Do you have advice for people who might feel a bit stuck, either professionally, entrepreneurially, or personally? I'm thinking, like, mum entrepreneurs, mumpreneurs, and being potentially having to deal with mum life issues, personal life issues, and stuff. Just not necessarily issues, just life, Maybe they might have already started a business and kind of feel a bit not sure where to go. How can you advise someone in that kind of situation? Or how would you?
That's so funny because two completely opposite answers just came in. And
Oh my God.
this is just a testament to the reality of that, because even I go through that. Like, I'm not exempt from feeling stuck, and when I feel stuck, I just slow down. Like, you got to listen to your body and listen to yourself. And even though you might feel like, if you're not in a position to stop, like if you're the breadwinner, money after mech, you need to keep it pushing, then you need to find a way to, I always say, like, build your business around your real life, like the life you actually live. Because sometimes we're trying to keep up with what we see online or what you see other people doing, and it's not actually fit for your life. You don't have that kind of type of time or that type of money to invest or that type of support network. So really take a look at your life, slow down, take stock at what time you have for yourself, first and foremost, for your household, your children, your husband, all the other responsibilities that you have, and then build your business around that. I believe in life optimization, not self-optimization. A lot of the personal development sort of language is around optimizing yourself, even down to the supplements that you take and working out so that you can serve others, or taking a rest or taking a break so that you can come back and work. But we don't exist to work. So work should work for us. We don't work for work. So how do you build your business around the life that you actually live, and then do the next best step with what you can? Like, what do you have available to you to use? Who do you have available to you to support? Don't be afraid to ask for help. Don't look in too many directions. I feel like there's so much advice as well. Like, go with like your belly, trust yourself, go with who you feel like sounds like they're talking to you directly. It works for you, it aligns with you, and just take their advice. Just take their advice. If you're looking for advice and support, shut everything else out, because again, there's so much noise, and it can really put you into a state of analysis paralysis. And you listen to people because you admire them and you see they're doing great things and they have what you want, but sometimes that they got because you're not willing to do what they've done because it doesn't align with you. So don't be afraid to shut out the noise, even the successful noise, and just follow your belly. Listen to the advice that really is suited to you and do the next best step. That's what I would say.
I like that, follow your belly, because again, we tend to, sometimes we've been conditioned to ignore our gut feelings.
Yeah, never.
Yeah, definitely now is certainly a time to start tapping into practicing, paying attention to those feelings, and how you feel around people, situations, and, you know, you'll be able to align yourself with what, as you said before, is in alignment for you, you know?
Yeah.
But again, like you said, there's a lot of noise going on. There's a lot of, how do you separate yourself from the noise?
I'm not sure that I've learned that. I tend to go quiet, so that's how I separate from the noise, to stop the noise. But I'm not sure. I'm just learning how to still. Actually, I do know. I just don't feel like I've done it as well as I could. I do know.
You're practicing.
I'm still in practice. It's definitely to just stay in your truth, like unequivocally, unapologetically standing in your potent truth. And there can only you can do you. Literally, like, only you can do. You can tell who's in their truth, because it's like, rah, did she really? Like, you know, it stands out. It separates itself. And I'm learning this because I feel like there are not a fear. You know when I say that you fear your own power? I don't think it is a fear. I just wonder if there's a better way. Because you learn from nature, and you've seen the leaders that have come. Some of the greatest orators in history have been and have spoken, and have stood proudly, and have been assassinated, especially us Black people. Is there a better way? I feel like there's more to be built than to be said. And so I tend to go quiet and just build away. And I pour into the people who I know can do the voice bit better than me, can do the noise bit better. And I like being in the position that I'm in, where I'm building. Like, I'll build the things underneath and behind and besides to support those of you who are the great orators of the future and of the now, to go on and be that great voice. I don't know that I've learned to do that for myself, or that I even want to be honest.
This mind is saving my life. Oh my gosh. I think, I can't remember what I was saying. I think I was saying along the lines of the gut feeling thing and being able to tap into. That's what I remember lastly. And the how important it is to be able to tap back into that, or at least start exercising or practicing that ability to, if you feel like you don't have that. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. Because I can't imagine not having that, but that doesn't mean that that experience doesn't exist. Do you get what I mean?
That's so true. When we're talking about
tapping into that gut feeling, people might not necessarily understand what that means. And how I take this very seriously, why I take it very seriously, and I'm sure many other people understand that, maybe you would understand why I'm saying this, is there's been so many times I've had that gut feeling and I've completely ignored it.
Yes.
Right? And something peak, proper peak happened. Like, I say proper peak like ghetto, but it's serious, like how bad.
Trust me, I know.
Or And it's not necessarily a bad thing because, as you said before, you mentioned about which I want to go into, I hope we've got time, where you were scammed with your app, and despite that situation, you was able to move on to a better situation. So that's not to say that when things don't happen our way or things bad happen, that they're necessarily bad. They're just perhaps part of the experience, isn't it? And how we grow from it and deal with it is important, but it's just as important to pay attention to that belly gut feeling. Do you get what I mean? That, yeah.
But that is a good way to learn. Like when you, if you just ask yourself, when was the last time I had a hunch about something and ignored it? Like what was the outcome? What was the result? What could I have done differently? Like this is how you train yourself to trust yourself. And going all the way back to the beginning when we're talking about, raising 18-year-old children, that's what we don't want to strip away from them. If we give them every instruction and every guidance, they don't know how to trust themselves, and they need to not only make their own mistakes but learn from them. That's what it means to learn from your mistakes. What did you do differently? Like what hunch did you have? What information was you given and didn't use? How could you learn from that? What could you do differently next time? What lets you know that that is a gut feeling? Because if it's not something that you've been using, which you wouldn't have, because parents, we tend to just give them every instruction and every guide and then expect them to go out into the world. And I'm not excluding myself, we're parents. That's what we do, because we want to keep them as safe as possible. But that is how you learn at that point. But many of us was never taught how to listen to our gut, was never taught to trust ourselves. Actually, the parenting that we was given taught us the complete opposite. That kind of children should be seen and not heard kind of thing. Like big people are speaking and that's it. You mustn't back chat, which is having your own voice. So many things strip you of being able to trust your own instinct, and then you're expected to follow your belly. Like what does that even mean, follow your belly? So I'm sure that experience does exist, like you've said, but there are practices that you can use in less dangerous circumstances or less critical circumstances where you learn to trust your gut. Almost like, well, I don't know, we're black, but maybe like cooking with a recipe. Yeah, try and make something from scratch that you've never made before without a recipe. Like what goes in here? Taste test it. Like a little bit more of this, a little bit. That's us following our gut. Just making food that you've never made is following your gut. Think it needs salt. Like you don't even know really, truly. You're just looking at, when you look at something, you say, that looks a bit fresh. I never understood that when I was younger. Like, how does my nan do that? Like, it even looks fresh. But then as you get older, you think that needs salt. I don't need to taste it to know, like, or that needs pepper. You just know. But that all of these are practicing to listen to yourself and listen to your gut and your guides. So
In a roundabout way, we're just talking about how our upbringing is in terms of not being taught how to trust our gut, right? That could be seen as something that was lacking. And not necessarily a bad thing. It's not, ostracizing our parents for not teaching us these certain things. But these things, obviously, what we miss out can have an impact on how we are as adults, isn't it? And this is a conversation that we often seem to delve into, And I guess I'm trying to beat around the bush because I don't want to call it childhood traumas because it's not always necessarily a trauma as such. Do you see what I'm saying? But that's what we always kind of label it.
That trauma thing, like a trauma just means like something that wounded you and you haven't been through the process of healing, right? So, or you haven't acknowledged the wound yet in order to work on the healing. And so things express themselves via the wound, right? But I think we do overuse the trauma thing. Like not everything is trauma. And for me, like it was about understanding what I've come over and what I've overcome. Like there's a difference. Like you go through things that are of your own volition. Like you put yourself in a situation. I think sometimes when we're looking at our past through the lens of social media psychology, we absolve ourselves of all responsibilities for the situations that we definitely did put ourselves in and the choices that we definitely did or didn't make. Like, yeah, everything is everything, and it is probably connected to something else, why you did or didn't make that choice. But if we can absolve ourselves from not knowing what we didn't know, then we must be able to give other people the same blessings and the same respect, like with regards to the parents. Like I was saying, we can't just blame our parents for everything because my mum was younger than I am now. Do you know what I mean? So you have to have some, give them some grace. But I think where you go into business, then later on into life, a business particular as well. I say career, I can't really speak on it because I've been an entrepreneur forever, even though I did go into teaching. I went into teaching so that I could go into school with my child. Like I didn't do it because I wanted to teach. And then when I didn't have my teaching job anymore, I homeschooled. So
Fair enough.
I didn't actually want to be a teacher. I was just fast. But actually, I loved it though as well. I loved it. And I think you go into or you create what it is that you needed. So all of my businesses have been because I needed something at that time. And even going into education, I had some dread experiences with teachers. I was kicked out of school having a really bad experience with a teacher who punched me in the face. So I knew that I was just.
Say these things so casually, like, and then just move on into the next story. A teacher punched
Real.
you in your face.
A teacher punched me in my face.
What are you telling me?
It was coming up towards the last day of school. You know, everyone starts like just letting loose and forgetting themselves. I'm in school suspension at this time for some, I don't know, some fight. Oh, actually, it was a fight. I beat up some girl because she was racist. So I was in 10-day exclusion in school. My best
Right
friend
now.
basically.
Hold on, wait. Please, this is a lot. I wasn't expecting this.
Just keeping it real.
I'm
Yeah.
going.
So I don't think I've ever told this full story, actually. I haven't. I'm not going to tell the full story, but
That's fair
this
enough.
is my reality.
Oh,
But coming up to the
yeah.
last day of school, year 11, everyone's going wild. I went to a girls' school. And I was in isolation, but isolation is usually you're just in the library or you're in this room, which was called isolation in my school, and you just sit in there and you do your schoolwork and then you go home, right? You don't get to socialize with anyone else. You have your lunch in there, you do everything in there, and then you go home. They locked the door when I was in isolation because they assumed that because everyone was kicking off and they saw me as somewhat of a ringleader, that it would be worse if I was outside. Now, this room is like, I don't know, 7 by 7 foot or something. It's a tiny room. And I'm claustrophobic. So the teacher has locked the door on the outside of the door, and I can hear my best friend, Michelle, on the outside of the door saying, "Open the door." You know, she's claustrophobic. She's not going to be able to breathe in that room. Like, because I don't get in lifts or none of that. Like, I was really bad with the claustrophobia. So anyway, she just booted it off. Wait, I've gone out of the isolation, and you remember that? Remember that scene from Mean Girls? Is it Mean Girls? Mean Girls, where they're all just kicking off in the hallway. Do you remember that? Like, I think the burn book gets printed and stuck all over the walls, and all the girls jumping all over. Is it Mean Girls? Is that one? Right. And it was, that's what it looked like. It looked something akin to that. It was wild. So I've basically just run towards the light to get out into the playground because I was already suffocating. And this teacher who hated me grabbed me by the scruff of the neck and boxed me in the face. I was like, wait, this was really happening. Now, the rest of this story, I can't say that I remember. I was told it from multiple different sources because I just blacked out and went nuts. I went nuts. It was just mad. It was just very mad. Someone called my brother to come down the school. I was like threatening this guy's life. It was a lot, but that was like the height of all rage. I've never felt such rage in all my life.
How
Like
old
I was
was
angered to the point of like I wanted to throw up, I wanted to pass out. I thought, did this man really just put his hands on me? And even so, I was expelled after that. But even when my mum came down to the school, my mum was like, "You lot have all lost your mind. Like, you've all lost your mind. We can't be sitting there having a discussion about my daughter after one of your member of staff who you haven't removed, who we haven't done anything about, is still here in your school. And she has threatened him and done all of these things, but he put his hand on her. So you're all mad. Even if you wanted her to come back, she ain't coming back. You've lost your mind. Forget about it." And so I went to a PRU, and that's how I done my GCSEs and stuff like that. But the PRU I was in was like real, real, real bad brains, like real, real bad children. And I wouldn't say that I was naughty. No, I was. But just to the point where I felt unheard. I think we all do, innit? You just feel unheard, you're disrespected. I was disrespected in a worse way in that school as well. And so when I was in a PRU with actual children with like behavioral, challenging behavior issues and violence, it was like I felt even more invisible. And I think it inspired a lot of my youth work after that as well. It's like we're just all unheard and we don't have any mediums of expression. And that's why we're all so violent and such thugs and this, that, and the other. But the reality is, like, who's even listening? You know, it's like back to that proverb, you know, we'll burn the place down to feel the warmth. So, yeah, back to your question is that you tend to create what it is that you needed. And I've always needed a system. I've always needed ease. I've always needed support. I see the Prosper platform like the helping hands that I didn't have, because I've always worn every hat in my business. I've been the marketer, I've been the CFO, the financial officer, I've been the director, I've been all of these people. And it's only now in this business that I'm able to like make hires and outsource and all of this, because I'm making the money to be able to do that. And I want to be able to provide that to others as well. Like for now, you can't, if you can't make hires, if you can't get freelancers or someone to help you, let the systems help you, like let the robots do it. That's what they're there for. So yeah, and it's been the same over and over again. In my old business, the Womb Network, which I had before this, which was a women's network, it was particularly for Black mums in business, just to have a space to like to cry and to fail forward and say, you know, this is what I'm trying, this is what I'm doing, you know, exchange services, that sort of thing, because that's what I needed. So yeah, I feel like your childhood trauma or, you know, the experiences that you go through in life definitely lead you to produce what it is that you need.
I'm still like I forgot what the question was that you've asked. I got stuck on the teacher, and it further like cemented in my head that it was a male teacher, and then you got excluded. I mean, if he was my child, you wouldn't be going back to that school anyway. But there's just that whole mess.
Yeah.
Okay, so you said something, and I'm trying to pick up on that, and my head's still spinning on what you just said. The womb network.
Yes.
You talked about the need to create that space to allow women to fail forward. I love that concept. What was that like? I mean, because I know for women it can be really difficult. It's I find it ironic that in many ways women are seen to be very emotional and very outspoken, particularly Black women, outspoken, loud, emotional, perhaps even erratic or whatever else anyone might try to label us with. But I find that Black women are some of the most strongest women. And I don't mean that even the context I'm saying that, I don't mean that to disrespect any woman who may not feel this way, but the levels of holding our shit together, I'm gonna have to blurt that out, holding our stuff together is a next level of strength for what we actually endure as women. Do you get what I mean? As girls, women, mums, wives, partners, daughters, like it's a lot. So I find that sometimes, not always, but sometimes you can be in a space with another woman and it's not necessarily so much it's a hostile situation. It can be that they're just trying to hold themselves together in it, and they don't want to seem as weak or emotional or the angry Black female, whatever that comes with. So I appreciate and admire you creating that space. And what was that like for having women to be able to open up and grow and move forward with you?
It was medicinal, man. It was like, because even me, and I feel like they were very safe in that space because I was no different than them. Like I've always believed in like decentering myself. I don't lead from the front. I'm not one of those kind of people. I lead from the center, even inside of myself and inside of my movements, my people, my communities. I like to lead from the center, and it means that I'm no different from you. I go through the same challenges that you do. I'm not on any kind of pedestal. I avoid the pedestal like the plague, because we're all human, and we should be allowed to experience the full spectrum of human emotion, not just as women, but as people, period. But like you say, black women, where other women are allowed to cry, like they're allowed to feel things, they're allowed, and there's an amazing process that happens at the other end of that purge, but we don't allow ourselves to get there, and then we don't get the benefits of it. So to provide a safe space to be able, and when I say safe space, I mean an actual safe space. Everyone's calling something a safe space, but is it safe? Like, is your business safe in there? Is your heart safe in there? Are your future plans safe in there? Like an actual safe space to be able to, and when, and to fail like consciously as well. I'm gonna try this thing. I don't know if it's gonna work. Like, when it falls down, will you pick me up, please? Like, to fail consciously, to fail quickly and safely, and to process it afterwards. Because sometimes you don't even stop to process. You don't stop to celebrate yourself. You don't stop to see where you went wrong. You don't stop, period. So you don't even know you're on the wrong track, and you're just going and going and going. And the womb network really existed, and womb was an a what's it called? An not anagram. What's it mean? What's it called? Anyway, it stood for where our minds begin, because our minds begin with the mother.
I just
Yeah,
don't.
an acronym. That's it. Anagram. It was an acronym for where our minds begin, and that had multiple meanings as well. Because like I was like tying into the universal mind, the celestial mind, the Mother Earth mind. So getting back to your health, your wellness, your well-being, and you as a mother and as a woman first, and the little girl within you. So it was about feeling safe in all of those spaces, like connected to the mastermind, the mother mind, and your own inner child as well. So there was so much processing that took place, and it took everything to let that business go. It died in lockdown basically, because it was an in-person thing, so it was able to hold, sacred circle space. After lockdown, it was like it's not the same being able to do this online without having events and things. And for me, I think I evolved beyond it, and I had to be okay with that. Like, what is actually next for me? And I wasn't okay with it for a long time. I still felt like I could just bring that back, and like we've been there before. Even with the Black Baby show, it took years to be like,
Gosh.
okay, let it go. Just let it go. It was what it was, and that's it. Like,
Can you have me in
so
your ears? Like, when is it coming back? But
do you
yeah.
know what? I still get asked that till this day, 2022. I still get asked, when's the Black Baby show coming back? It's not, baby. It's not.
I understand. And the thing is, I have to say, and I say this every time we speak, but this is a different kind of space and platform that the first people who, some people who may not know this, I hope, whatever, some people may not know this. I started out making, I was a baby wearing consultant. I still am. And I started making, it's not really about me, it's about you. But I started making African print ring slings and selling them and teaching them people how to use them. And somehow you got in contact with me. And
Yeah.
that was the first time I met you and had my first sort of market space at an event. I was at the Black Baby Show. And I was nervous as hell, thinking, what the hell am I doing here? But I felt like you made me feel welcome and I appreciate that. And it felt like from then you believed in me and my product and what I was about, more so than the product, what I was about and my intention. So I'm always thankful and grateful to you. So I'm going to start crying now. Don't start. No, but seriously, and from there it's evolved into like what you have with your journey into now Black British parents. So
Yeah.
these things are part of those foundations and those seeds that are planted and that we go on to build foundations for others and the seeds that we share with others too. So yeah, I just dropped that one in there. So Shen's a G from a long time. I
Thank
can't
you
and
very
as well. Like all of us in many ways, isn't it? But it's again having that support network. And back to what you're saying about the womb network, in my mind when I hear you talk about the womb, I think about creativity. I think about creation. I feel like I think about conceiving and conception and birthing. Do you get what I mean? And
Yes.
usually when we think about these things, we just think when we think about the woman, that's what we think in terms of birthing humans. Yes, we do that, but we also birth ideas. We also birth
Exactly.
concepts and art and so much more, you know? So yeah, man, that's amazing. And again, I didn't get to experience that part of you, but I am now. But what I will say is yeah, man, blessings and gratitude for being able to create that for the women that you've been able to help during that time. Because I'm sure in whichever way path they've moved on from you, they're flourishing some way and they will never forget, you know, what you've
I
been
can
able to.
only hope. I hope so.
So, what's something, it's a random question, what's something you have learned about yourself today or recently that you didn't know about yourself before? If there's anything, there might not be anything.
Oh, there's always something. I've
Yes.
learned about myself today or recently. I don't know if it's so much learnt. It's more of an acceptance.
Okay.
So I've accepted about myself that, and understanding why I like nice things. There's like, we always have this, especially when it comes to money, building Prosper has helped me to really understand what prosperity is and why it's important. If you look at like old prosperity gospel, like Christian prosperity gospel, Reverend Ike and that, a lot of it is focused on money and material wealth, and you know that it's your birthright and money isn't the root of all evil, the love of money is the root of all evil and that sort of thing. And it kind of stops there in that new agey manifestation material stuff, right? But the closer I get to myself and the natural world is the more I realize that actually in this world you're being charged for nature. Like I prefer cashmere over polyester because it's feels nicer.
Natural.
It's
Yeah, okay,
natural,
fair enough.
right?
Yeah.
Yeah, it feels nicer. Like it's more comfortable. I would rather wear the cotton, like where my skin can breathe. I would rather use the natural products. I would rather eat the natural foods. I would rather drink the natural teas because it feels nicer in my body. It's closer to nature. It's better for you. And you know, they charge you for it. Like if I want an electric car, like economically, not economically, but like it's healthier for the planet. Like it works better. Yeah, economically, on my pocket, it works better. There's no fuel crisis for me if I want a Tesla. Do you know what I mean? If I want a marble countertop, it's nature. You're being charged for nature. So the nice things are the natural things. And you're allowed to like the natural things. Like we should be gravitating towards nature and natural. What makes it a problem is the way that they harvest it, or the way that it's sourced, or the way that it's overpriced. Like, you know, like diamonds ain't worth nothing. It's just cut pretty glass that children are mining and dying for. So it's about understanding the process of where you get your nice things from and understanding how you can do better to go about obtaining the nice things. Whereas before, and all the way back, going back to Enlightrepreneur as well, I always felt like I wasn't allowed to like nice things, or I wasn't spiritual if I was in the pursuit of money, or it, when I went in to do like corporate consultancy and this sort of thing, I have to leave my spiritual self at the door because that's woo-woo and you can't bring that in here. When the reality is, my phone's dying. When the reality is, this is all interconnected, and the truth of it is not in the thing, it's in the process. And if you can contribute better towards the process, then you shouldn't really punish yourself for wanting what you want and liking what you like and pursuing what it is that you are pursuing. So that's something that I've recently accepted about myself because I've only just understood it fully, like for what it means to me personally. So yeah, that's
That's a
it.
great answer. I wasn't expecting that. Well, anyway, I'm not going to expect any of these answers, am I really? But that was a fantastic answer. I'm really, yeah. Thank you. You were talking about, you mentioned about being spiritual in business and making money. That is a very taboo kind of area to reflect on. Do you know what I mean? Everyone. I don't know about what's said publicly or personally, but I know that there's this thing where if you're trying to help or assist or support the community in some way, then you know you shouldn't be charging for it. What's your perspective on that.
There are freebie seekers everywhere. I feel like all people has their freebie seekers.
Freebie
Yeah, they love a freeness, but I feel like it comes from a place of being. You know, sometimes we use this language, especially around about now, Black History Month. This being recorded in October, so you hear a lot of language around being underserved, underprivileged, underrepresented, and actually, Black people are some of the most over-mentored, over-educated, over-experienced, over-qualified people on the planet. And that kind of that entitlement, that wanting it for free, wanting it for nothing, comes from that same narrative that has been put on us that we actually don't have and that we're needy and that we should be given. And so that's how people behave. But the reality is that when we want to, going back to the nice things, when your nice things are Jordans or getting your hair done or your lashes or your nails or whatever, you can find it. So we are very resourceful people. And even when we're not well resourced, we're resourceful. We know how to make something out of nothing always. And so that behavior is just unnecessary. And I feel like it. You teach people how to treat you as well. So because we are very giving and caring, and that Mother Teresa thing, when people expect you to give, you tend to give. Or even if they pay you or whatever, you want to give a discount, or you want to give an offer, or you want things to go on for longer than they should, and things like that. And that is a learned behavior. You're teaching people to expect more than your capacity from you. So until we learn to take responsibility for, and I don't mean just take responsibility externally, but also with your own self-worth and with your own self-knowing, knowing that you should be, reciprocated and paid prosperously for what it is that you're putting out, then the more we do that, the more people will learn that, that this not Nagasa. Also, when it comes to like Black businesses overcharging, I know a lot of people say that we overcharge, or oh, but that's too expensive, I can get that from over there. Like, unless you're playing a game of economics and building Black wealth, you're not going to understand why things cost differently than where they can cost elsewhere. If we're not the producers, the manufacturers, if we're not the wholesalers of things, it's going to cost more on the business to consumer end, right? Whereas other communities might have access from production all the way through, their whole line they have access to, and so it means that they can buy more, or they can put yeah they can provide things at a lower cost because it's en masse. If you don't understand Black economics and Black wealth, which you should really be paying attention to if you're buying Black anyway, you shouldn't worry. Like, it shouldn't matter that you have to pay a little bit more for something because the production costs are higher, or because in the long run, the longer the say the Black pound, because we're here in the UK, stays within the Black community, the more we can charge less on the other end, because we'll be able to produce more, we'll be able to wholesale more, and then we'll be able to sell things business to consumer at a lesser rate or at a more balanced price. So yeah, I think it's about education. It's about us as business owners educating how we should be treated, and service providers, and also people being willing to learn why things are the way they are, and not just being entitled and expecting things for free. And otherwise, you just ignore them. The ones who can't afford it are usually the ones that pay.
Yes. Yeah.
They respect you so much because they know, like, they know your value, they see your value, they really know how you can help them. They will try everything in their power. They will give you an exchange of service, they will promote you, they will talk about you, they'll put your names in rooms that you can't imagine, because they couldn't afford to pay you. And that this goes back to that following your belly, like, you know who's who. And sometimes, like, even still, I till this day I say, oh, the freebie seekers, blah blah blah, but I still help people every single day. I still have mentors that do not pay. Like, I still pour into people, but I know who's who. And and it usually works. Like, the impact is long lived. They go ahead and pay it forward to other people, and they don't forget where they got their, you know, they don't, not where they came from, but they remember you, that you helped them. Sometimes before I even remember that I helped them, they remember that I helped them. It's not usually those people, to be honest. In one of my business, I did have a sliding scale payment system. So depending on how much access to financial ability you have, so if you're financially free, or if you're on a certain amount of income, or if you're getting state benefits, or you need certain support, or even just the physical support that you have, if you could, you know, ask for a childminder tomorrow, you're not in the same position as someone who has no support network in their city. So I had that as a payment. It's all to access the same service. So depending on where you were, you all get access to the exact same mentoring and coaching. So there's different ways to do it. It's not just about like, oh, you can't afford it, so you don't get this. I don't really like that kind of thing. But the people who feel entitled and usually behave wicked and bad about it are the ones that can afford it. They just don't want to. They don't see the value. They don't respect the value, and they don't want to pay for that. But they will pay for something else, like the dance or whatever. But they just don't want to pay for that, and they're the ones that you got to let your belly lead you away from. So,
100%. Yes, I like the way you worded that. That was very eloquently done. And yeah, right on the nail. I love it. Is there any advice or a perspective that you can share with new parents or for parents who have been parenting for a while? I mean, because, you know, it might be one and both message, or a message for new parents or a message for seasoned parents.
just in general, like
Yeah, it's just
just
in
any advice
general,
in general.
whatever, even in your field or business, or you know, just parenting as a whole. Because I mean, this is Black British parents, so what message do you have for
It's
parents?
going to sound really, really cliche, but mum really, really does know best. Like, you really do know what's best for your child. Like, I don't, you know, you're going to hear all the different voices and get all the different advice, even from other parents. You really do know best, because what I've found many times is that I always end up coming back to what I knew in the first place. Like, I will try other things, like, and be open to receiving advice, and but know, again, it's the same with everything. Know what works, like, with you and for you,
With
and learn to
yourself.
trust yourself. Yeah, know yourself and trust yourself with regards to your parenting, because sometimes not everyone has your best interest at heart. First of all, no one has your child or your experience of parenting. They have a child, but they don't have yours. And yeah, and then again, even more so if you're going into business, or you know, you're pursuing a career or whatever, you know what's best for your family. So people will have all the opinions in the world about your business, or you know, why you're doing that and these kind of things, but you do know what is best for yourself and your family. So yeah, that is my advice.
That's a nice one, I think. And I think to add to that as well, there might be times when somebody does share something with you, and they're coming from a good space. So you have to trust that as well, but you have to know your
Yeah.
place, you know yourself, and you know the people
When you know
around
yourself, yeah.
you. You know who to trust when they're giving you the real talk, you know, kind of thing. So, Shen, this has been a blast. Thank you
Thank you.
so
I love this. You know, I could just sit here and just chat
I
forever.
know. It's like we need to like kind of end this, I think, because but we'll be, you know, blessed to have you join us again at any time. You're ready and welcome to come and have a chat with us and, you know, share anything that's going on with you with our following, Black British Parent. So tell us a bit about how people can know more about the Prosper platform. First of all, why the name before we go into that? Why what how did that name come about, the Prosper platform?
Do you know what? I can't tell you. I know. I swear it was in a dream. I think it just, I swear it was in a dream, because I don't remember like drafting out no names and saying, oh, this, that. I didn't have no other options or nothing. It was just Prosper platform. And because again, it was about having a platform to be able to provide prosperity in the fullness of what that is. So equitable prosperity, impactful prosperity, and prosperous prosperity, meaning beyond just material wealth, being able to be prosperous in your health, wealth, and love of self. So yeah, our slogan, come for the platform, stay for the prosperity, is true, because you come because you feel like you need somewhere to host your website, you need to take your business online. But the reality is that it's going to bring you prosperity in all the ways that it can, because it makes your life easier, it makes you more wealthy, you know, it improves your well-being. So that's why Prosper Platform.
Wicked. How can people get to know more about the Prosper Platform?
Well, actually, this is the first place, because today the URL has changed. It is now prosperplatform.io. So before it was the Prosper Platform, we dropped the and it's just okay. Prosper Platform now, because, well, for more than one reason, but to shorten it, to make it more condensed and concise, but also because everyone says Prosper Platform anyway. So you've got to like listen to the people and listen to the audience. If they're already typing in Prosper Platform, people search Prosper Platform, like when you look in your Google Analytics, like something like 70 to 80 times more than they type in the Prosper Platform. So why is it called the Prosper Platform?
Yeah.
And did you know that Facebook used to be called the Facebook?
Yes. Yes.
Right. Yeah. So they also dropped the. I thought, listen, if Facebook did it, then there must be a reason. It's because people do call things like by its name rather than with its suffix or its title. So it's prosperplatform.io, and IO it because it's a tech platform. So I want to focus more on the tech because that's the direction that it's going in. I'm very much an Afrofuturist, and I believe that technology and nature should work harmoniously together, and so there's so much to come with that. But yes, if you go to prosperplatform.io, that's how you can join the movement, join the cause.
At this moment, I'm supposed to be really bigging you up, but I'm like, how dare you end on that note talking about Afrofuturism? Like, we have to come back now.
That's a whole new conversation.
Like, you get what I'm saying? Like, what was that? Okay. And appreciate you, love you.
I appreciate you.
And love and blessings to you and yours.
Thank you. Likewise, love and blessings. Bye.
That's this week's episode of the Black British Parent Podcast. Be sure to go to blackbritishparent.co.uk to join the conversation. Thanks for listening. Until the next time.